welcome you back to Worldwide Wrestling. K.O. Rule is making her way to the ring area. Here's a young lady who got a little return match against Akira Hokuto.
Also used to be the maitre d' at Benihana's.
So recently, Akira Hokuto defeated K.O. Rule to advance to the championship match of the U.S. or the World's Women's Tournament.
These Japanese women are very, very tough. And how Sonny Ono ever, ever got a contract for Carol Channing, I'll never know.
It's not Carol Channing. That's Akira Hokuto.
Boy, look at the horn on her.
Not a horn.
Must be. All right, Kay, I think that's enough of that.
Think so too. K.A.R.U.
K.A.R.U.
Right. K.A.R.U. am I right?
Coming in hot for some WCW Saturday night in 1996.
Boy, that's if there's ever a way to butcher a name.
I love it. It was WCW's attempt at women's wrestling, and they had
cut and killed.
They had a very short-lived successful attempt, of course, that we all remember, that Eric Bischoff takes full credit for.
Oh, yes, yes. Apparently, he invented the style.
Yes, he invented bringing women's wrestling to the West.
especially the Japanese, right? Apparently, he was the first to do it. Ignore the fact that Bull Nakano and all of them had appeared in the WWF years prior.
Yeah,
just ignore that. Didn't happen.
As long as you ignore that, but K.A.R.U., as Tony Schiavone pronounces, is our Oz Academy champion here in 2010. As we break back to 1996, so it's been a.
She's not WCW champion.
She's not WCW champion. No, it is the one Akira Hokuto in the gas mask.
Hokuto.
Yeah, right next to all of Bobby Heenan's things that would get him canceled in 2010.
It's a good thing it's not a thing for him now, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was fun. That was a fun time. Oz Academy Get Wild is our show today in the Joshi 2010's journey. September 19th, 2010, from Shinjuku Face. It is the place of Oz Academy, as we found out.
It's their home turf. Some might say it's their impact zone.
It is. Oh, no. WCW and a TNA reference in the same podcast. Welcome to the Red Leaf Retrocast, Joshi 2010s, where we also bring up failing wrestling companies all the time, apparently.
We just need an ROH one, and we got the trifecta. Spare.
I mean, are we saying they're truly failing, or are they just kind of Sendai-ing away?
I mean, Sendai is failing, so yes.
Okay, all right. Yeah, attendance of 400, so I guess a full card if, you know, you want to be nice about it. This is kind of their peak.
Boy, their peak is 400 people. That's quite a peak there.
I mean, I guess they run the occasional Korakuen every now and again, but this is basically what they do.
2010, sure. Modern times, much less.
I mean, they kind of run the same amount, but it's kind of less at the same time. It's the same people. The more we go on in this, the more we see a lot of the same names at the top, and not a lot of names kind of coming in. So, I think the reason why, Kay, I chose the Get Wild card from September 2010 is some of these matches got good reviews, saw some interesting lineups here on this card, and I feel like it represented a good, accurate representation of what the Oz Academy booking is like on a year-round basis outside of their major shows.
I mean, at this point, definitely. Modern times, it's like, I think I've described watching Oz Academy, like, show by show, kind of like Sendai. You can't watch a show by show. It's like torture.
Well, I mean, we made a whole section of the podcast dedicated to essentially Oz Academy-type booking, where show-to-show makes basically zero sense. There's no new talent being pushed. And if there is, you don't buy it. In this case, it's kind of what a lot of people, when they first get introduced into Oz Academy, or at least, you know, upwards of a few years ago, you have Ozaki and her crew with the babyface foil to them, if you want to put it that way. They're kind of on the mic at the Shinjuku face table, and they cut a promo kind of being the antithesis to the Sekigun group, and things are set up to eventually someone to beat Ozaki and crew. In this case, on this show, the current champion is Kaoru.
Kaoru.
She is the champion, so she is the main foil. And as we'll find out, years and years goes by, it's the default Aja Kong role. Not much has changed.
Nothing has changed. Aja Kong is still in the same role now in 2010 as she is in 2021.
Yeah, when I saw Kaoru in this role, it was kind of an eye-opener. I go, oh, okay, that's kind of what Aja Kong does on shows-by-show basis. Ozaki causes some shit. Aja Kong gets on the mic. Hey, I got a thing. I am going to stop you. Rinse, repeat formula. And there's a reason why fans fall into Oz Academy, get it for a program, and then they fall out super fast. It's because it's been the same for the last 10-plus years, just in this instance of seeing it.
Oh, yeah, it's 100% the same. It's right down to, like you said, like, it's even less so now, I think, because Aja Kong used to do this more frequently, as we're seeing, right? We're seeing her call them out much more frequently. Nowadays, she's not even really calling them out much more frequently. She's on cards, getting screwed over, all of them are getting screwed over, and it's like once a year she does the big I'm gonna beat you all up thing, and it's been the past 3 years that's been what it is. It's out the entire year, Ozaki and Sekigun run amok, do what the fuck they want, and at the end of the year, or the big bum show, Aja Kong decides to get off her ass and start beating everyone's ass, and that's it. Back to the same formula. It's to the point where at 2010, you could watch their bigger shows and they're entertaining. And their smaller shows you miss. Nowadays, you don't even watch their bigger shows anymore because they're no good. Which is why their attendance is constantly falling, why they're running less shows and everything. It's you know, rinse, repeat. They're not fixing anything, they're not doing anything. It's a promotion that's gonna die soon, honestly, but you know.
Yeah, so before I follow up on that, I must say, if you're listening on the Red Leaf Retrocast Patreon, thank you very much for contributing to our journey here through the 2010s. If you sign up for the $1.50 tier, and if you sign up at all, or go check out the Patreon, you will see our pinned post over all of the shows and key matches that we watched in 2010, along with our completed a schedule of what we're going to watch for 2011, because we're coming up on the end of the year 2010, and we're jumping into a year where a lot of promotions start to kick off into new prospects, and you see a lot of freelancers start to delve off into their own ventures separately. So go check that out, sign up, and if you're listening 2 weeks later on the Big Egg Joshi podcast, that's okay too. We're just happy you're listening, and that's why we're putting these out.
Yeah, definitely. It's actually, as we get to the closing of 2010, we're starting to see not more of a simmering down, but more of like some promotions coasting into the end of the year, right? Like it was like Oz Academy seems to be kind of trying to heat up, and we see Neo going get towards its closure. Wave is kind of simmering. They're not really doing anything. It's very interesting.
Yeah, Wave had their Catch the Wave. They had their anniversary show, so they're kind of done. Sendai is nothing, as we've discovered, or at least confirmed.
Yeah, right.
As you said, Neo's closing. They're on their last leg. They announced that in May of 2010, and it's really been the same situation all year. Although they are putting on still strong cards, they're going out with a bang. Oz Academy here, they were gearing up for the memorial show that they do every year, and now they're seemingly on this show, we definitely felt that they were building towards the next program, and no shock, it involves Aja Kong.
Right.
In Ice Ribbon, they are going on to their next set of stories. It feels like, you know, we won't pretend that the promotion's hot or anything. However,
2011, it's not, no.
No, no. 2010, 2011, because it's filled with a lot of...
2010, my bad. Yeah.
Well, it's filled with a lot of children, let's be honest. But they are building, and that's what makes it interesting and fun. They're really trying to find their own identity and building stars as they continue to try to build what Ice Ribbon is. And then, as we'll find out in 2011 here, when we are making a lot of the list of what we're going to cover, JWP really starts trying to do something new, and they're not coasting. They seem to be the promotion really trying to bring in a new audience, try to kick something up into gear with some tournaments that we'll start seeing in 2011.
Yeah, it's also interesting. 2011 is going to be the start of the Emi Sakura-less Ice Ribbon. She leaves.
It'll start that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see how that transition between Emi to Tsukasa and Shida goes, and how, if memory serves, I don't think it was a super smooth transition. I know it didn't seem as rough as one would think. But there was definitely some hiccups, if memory serves.
Well, if memory serves on this card today, Oz Academy Get Wild it was a fine show. Unfortunately, the best match on the show was actually a repeat match from the Plum Memorial show, the tag title match that we've covered just a couple episodes ago on this 2010s journey, was the Chikayo and Kato winning the title match against Akito and Ranyuyu. So that was kind of funny that was the first thing we saw on this DVD was a repeat.
It's almost like they were aware that this card, this DVD, didn't have a whole lot, so they decided to add that match again to it.
Yeah, so once again, this Get Wild show is after the Plum show, and it's setting up kind of the story that's going to take us into the new year. So we really wanted to see what an Oz Academy show was like in their building period. And I gotta say, Kay, I wasn't disappointed with the card, but I was far from impressed or hyped.
You see, I wasn't surprised at all. I think that the feeling you're probably looking for is underwhelmed. Because,
yes.
I mean, that's sort of what it is, right? It's not... I expected this because I kind of know the Oz Academy thing a bit more. So I'm aware that their building shows are usually like the ones you're not really paying too much attention to. You don't watch them week by week or show by show. You're not supposed to. They want you to, but you're really not going to. It's a terrible way of watching Oz Academy. You have cards like this where, sure, they're building, but most of the cards fill with nothing.
Well, when I see the people on this card, I see a lot of the people that we've seen all year.
Right.
People most familiar with the promotion. You see them on every show, and no one is under 30. And if there is, there's one person. And who's taking that
pick? Usually a rookie or something, yeah.
Yeah, there's one person in their 30, under 30 on this entire card, which is, a good representation of what Oz Academy is. It is straight up the old promotion.
Yeah, it's never changed from that identity. Even Diana, which we'll see in 2011, is very much just the old people promotion. Both of them suffer for it in different ways.
Yeah, so let's get into this, because it's not all doom and gloom. We're just kind of looking at a bigger picture to it all. So in our opening match, it's Hiren, our opening match queen, taking on Mayumi Ozaki and beats her. Very strange.
Yeah, it. I feel like this was meant to, it was done on purpose. Yeah, I think Ozaki threw the match.
Yes, she absolutely did. She was throwing the match and wanted to go home, and this is where we see the story of Kaoru on the table, gets the mic, and gets out a parchment of some kind, and it kind of books Ozaki on the show, saying there's a main event, a trios match, and Ozaki is forced to team with her and Aja Kong against Sekigun, the Sekigun team in particular, against Hiren, Takako, in a way, and Yumi Oka. And something or another stipulation requires Ozaki to participate. She can't just leave. So she's all dismayed.
I remember now.
Yeah, she's all in a dismay. She's all upset. So it's your baby face getting one over the on the heel yet again, because the story throughout most of the year has been Kaoru versus Ozaki. Now, let's not forget that Anja Kong was the one that helped Kaoru out on this journey, because Ozaki was not giving Kaoru the time of day, no matter how many matches she won. Nora was booking her in a situation to win over the champion, who was Carlos Amano at the time. So Aja Kong took that opportunity that she had and kind of gave the title match to Kaoru. So it was kind of a babyface helping each other out situation, and Kaoru took advantage, and then they had the blow-off match, which we saw on the Plum Memorial show.
Right. I kind of, for a second there, I had forgotten that this was the whole Ozaki decided, hey, I have a match. I don't have a match tonight, so I'm just going to be in the opening match, lose, and go home.
Yeah. Real heel shtick there. So that was match one. Match two was Ranyuyu and Tomoko Nakagawa taking on and defeating Chikayo Nagashima and Nao Komatsu, the rookie of Oz Academy, a.k.a. the Pin Eater. 15 minutes, 52 seconds this went.
Yeah, so, just a reminder, Nao Komatsu doesn't have a long career.
She does.
Shocking.
Not.
trained by Ozaki, is not a rookie of Oz Academy, a freelance rookie, because, fuck you, Ozaki doesn't own rookies, and she refuses to have young people on her roster.
Well, I mean, she'll train you. She will definitely have no issue
with...
She'll
take your money. She'll take your money and train you.
Yeah, but she'll book you at the very least, and, Nao is on every card, but, do we ever see her improve or get a higher position? No.
No, I don't think you ever do either.
No, that's kind of says a lot without saying much.
Right, I mean, it's the whole thing of I'll book you on my shows. You're not my roster member. You're a rookie freelancer, but I'll book you because I need somebody to keep pins on my card.
It's funny how that formula hasn't changed over a decade later.
Except she's not training the wrestlers that are eating pins anymore, because she's not training wrestlers. Required effort to train wrestlers.
Well, you brought up the topic on the podcast proper, Redly Prochercast, over the old mindset and unwritten rule of booking another promotion's roster member. You care to inform perhaps a new audience of said rule? Because that might have something to do with how Oz Academy books certain people as well.
So the rule is, and this is primarily in stuff like Diana, Pierre J, and Seedling, from what I've gathered, is if on their promotion, if they're not booked at a certain level or above a certain level, you can't book them at a certain level in your card. So say Madeline's case, right? Madeline has never held a singles title in Diana. Therefore, she can never hold a singles title in any other promotion, no matter what. And she can't beat a mid-level wrestler, so she can't beat somebody who's not a rookie. So she can't pin Totoro, right? Not to pin Totoro. Because she hasn't pinned anybody on that level in Diana. She's not allowed to. You can't book her above where Diana has her on their card. Not allowed to. And it's a terrible mindset, but it's a mindset that dates back to the 90s when everyone was sharing each other's talent. You just don't notice it because everyone's talent was at such a high level. They're already booked up high on the card, like your Yokotas, your Toyotas, Chikusas, all these people. You start noticing it when you look down the card at the smaller people. That's when you notice that rule.
So that's an interesting kind of thing to keep in mind when you're looking at up-and-coming talent, and why they're put into big programs and seemingly lose every time they're not in their home promotion. It's an interesting little case study that I thought more people should know about. And
freelancers have less leverage no matter what promotion they're in. Unless they're a big name, they have less leverage. So unless your name is Seriano, you don't have leverage. If your name's Kaho, you don't have leverage. They tell you you're going to eat a pin, you're going to eat the pin.
Yeah, at that point it kind of is more on who you know.
Exactly. It's who you know, who you're friends with, and who values you more.
Yeah, so you can kind of put puzzle pieces. You can start to put puzzle pieces together when you start seeing various names start to get is sort of a push, but you kind of know a certain ceiling that they're at and what their ultimate like end goal is going to be. So keep that in mind as we go forward on this 2010s journey, especially in a promotion like Oz Academy. It's very interesting. So I liked Ron Yu and Chikayo in this match. They just had that really big tag title match that was really cool. Ron Yu is on a roll lately, just in ring talent and really putting in big performances. Chikayo is big babyface. She's one of the best workers in the scene. But she definitely has a sort of ceiling to her at where she is. But I just want to throw out that Ran Yu is she seemingly heavily protected in the mid-card and tag title scene. You never see her really eat pins. It's very interesting to me.
Yeah, so her name, as we both have discussed before, pops up a lot all over the place. And that's kind of where I know her from. I have seen very little up until now of her, but her name is all over the place. So I'd imagine, much like Itsuki Aoki in modern times, though she's a better wrestler than her, she's well-regarded and well-liked by some people. She's more protected than Itsuki, but sort of in the same regard, like she's all over the place. Somebody likes her. So they're making sure she's getting opportunity, sort of deal.
Yeah, and it was a long match, and you're probably wondering why a match with a rookie went almost 16 minutes. Well, this was a common thing in promotions like an Oz Academy, like a Neo, where they would have a very small booked roster for a show, and you would find maybe 4 to 5 matches. And at times, as we saw on this show, you would see people involved in multiple matches because it was a number of things. They didn't have the roster to book is prime target one. And then prime target two would be they knew they wouldn't be able to draw enough often enough in order to pay for talent to fill out a larger card. So you end up with these longer matches. Kind of keep that in mind to kind of modern promotions like Seedling now. That's an example. Modern day Oz Academy. You get the idea. It is no exception here to that rule.
Yeah, a lot of it, especially modern time with Seedling, I think is a good example, because now they're starting to get back into the Hanoi Hana on three different matches, is they can't afford people, no matter if they're booked the venue, got to take the gate and everything. They just can't afford them.
Mm-hmm.
They can't afford to book anybody, be it Itsuki Aoki or whoever, so that's to say something when they're able to book small-level talents.
Yeah. So on this show, we don't know who the next tag challengers are going forward. But if things are par for the course in Oz Academy, we will just get to a show down the future, and it'll just be two people challenging for the title with no story. As we've discovered, or at least what I'm learning here now, Kay, is this tag title, as important of a drawing factor as it is in Oz Academy, it's not really booked as a I don't want to say it's an important title, but it's definitely a hot potato type situation.
Yeah, I think the only time the belt ever matters or is ever seen as a bigger belt is when either Ozaki and somebody has it or somebody in Sekigun. So, example, when Maya and Sayori had it, it was seen as a big belt because it was within Sekigun. The minute they dropped it, the belt was no longer booked high up on the card, there was no stories in it, and it was just hot potatoed.
Yeah.
You'll see a pattern with that. Whenever the belts aren't on Sekigun, they don't matter. That book, like, they should matter.
Yeah, it's a very flawed idealism with how to book something.
It's ego.
That, yeah, well, it's a very flawed idealism with how you want to draw a title belt. Even if you only defend it, you know, a handful of times a year, so you just, whenever you defend it, you just expect a title change in Oz Academy. That is the mindset here. Our mid-card match is our former champion, Carlos Amano, headbutt style connoisseur. She's taking on the current tag title champion in Sonoko Kato. she... Look, I like Amano. She's very interesting, a very unique style, to her own detriment.
Don't say.
Kato is the tag champion. This went to a 20-minute draw. Was this necessary, is my question.
So, another thing about these sort of cards when you can't fill cards or fill card time, you get a lot of draws in order to fill time. That's what this was. It didn't need to go to a draw. It could have easily not gone to a draw, but you need to have an hour on your card at least. Hour plus, because that's how long you booked the venue. So, 20-minute draw it is.
Well, I get the feeling that... So, Amano and Manami Toyota are tag champions. Or, they were tag champions, and they held them for a while. Could this be a situation where, since Amano didn't beat Kato single-handedly, now she's setting up to be the next challenger for the tag titles with Manami Toyota?
I mean, that could be a thing. I think my sort of thought process is probably a little bit more of what they're going for, because if they were going to do that, they could have had like a post-match for it, set it up after this, and they kind of just didn't. To me,
correct.
That lends itself to being that lends itself to being a time filler decision as opposed to a story decision.
Yeah, okay. So that's really what I was kind of driving there with, is when you're trying to dissect booking patterns of companies, you may look at a match like this where, okay, maybe they are setting something up in the future. Well, the next tag challengers don't happen until January. Keep in mind, we're in September, and it's Hiroyo Matsumoto and Tomoko Nakagawa.
Exactly. They weren't setting anything up. It was just to fill time.
Right. So this is a case of it's a fill time factor. And they look, maybe at a future show, they might address it in the past. But if this was an actual storyline, they would have. Look, it's September. The next tag match isn't until January. It certainly was not anything of the sort. So. What do you think of the match itself, though, through styles and particularly Amano and Kato's work?
I mean, Kato has not really ever been that impressive, so...
I agree.
The match relied a lot on Carlos Amano's ability to sort of make the match interesting. I mean, her style, like you said before, is incredibly unique. You don't see it for good reason, but I think on the whole, the match kind of was okay. It definitely didn't need to go 20 minutes. It could have gone like 10, and I feel like that was about as much as it should have gone.
Yeah, I think it should have been.
You can tell Kato can't do past 10 minutes. You can tell.
No, so when I watch Kato, and she's in her mid 30s, she could still go to an extent. My issue with her is she just isn't dynamic enough for these long matches. She's kind of got her three moves. She relies on that Emerald Flosion driver constantly, and it seemingly never puts anyone away. She has to hit like five of them before it does. It's the same formula with her. I am not impressed with Sanako Kato. Carlos Amano, very dynamic, great personality. She pops up off the screen. She's got a unique look. There's a reason why she was champion for a while, and there's a reason why she was a pushed commodity earlier in her career in the late 90s.
Yeah, Carlos Amano was, she had it to an extent, right? A lot of people saw that. It's unfortunate that, you know, she ended up fucking up her brainstem, but, you know, a headbutt style tends to do that. But it's, unless you go watch her earlier stuff, right? She's actually very good. You can see that. I think she also suffered from the, you can't push her above her, where she is in her home promotion, because she was one of those talents that was not already established by the time everyone was sharing talent. It took her a while to get there, essentially.
Yeah, and speaking of sharing talent, the further I get into my LLPW journey, there's a nice little plug, as I am starting to review LLPW on the Red Leaf Retrocast Patreon $5 tier, I will get to a point very quickly in LLPW's lifespan where they have to start relying on talent coming in and them going to other promotions to not fill out the card, more or less, but to keep it fresh. And it creates an interesting dynamic on it's a kind of a give-take situation is, when is it necessary for us to sacrifice our own roster to fill out cards, and who do we sacrifice to do that? Because LLPW was not one of the biggest promotions in the scene at the time. It's a very fascinating circumstance there.
Yeah, I think to sort of piggyback briefly on that, is that a lot of it was their financial situation, right? JWP itself was able to coast off of both the financial backing and still having the name JWP, so right. People still knew who they were.
Yeah.
And they were still recognized by the other promotions and by the fans as JWP.
So speaking of JWP, we move on to a former star of that promotion. It is Dynamite Kansai. Big Splash Mountain girl herself, taking on and defeating Akino, someone who is still kicking around today at 47 years old, 14 minutes, 8 seconds. Kay, I have a question.
Sure.
Dynamite Kansai is a beast of a woman. She is awesome. She's a powerhouse. She's sick awesome. Do you disagree with this?
No, I do not.
Okay. You admit she is a strong woman, correct?
Yes, she is. Splash Mountain's proof of that.
Okay. So now I ask you this. Is she injured in 2010 at this point in time?
Not that we're ever made aware of.
Do you know why I'm asking this question?
Yes, you've commented when we were watching her arms seem to be a bit smaller and bruised.
So Dynamite Kansai's right arm. So for those that want a mental picture of this, imagine Dynamite Kansai wearing Kevlar jacket. Okay, it's got no sleeves. It's a big body armor type situation going on. Well, she's got these armbands around her biceps. Okay, maybe slightly above it, and on her right arm, just around that armband and up to her shoulder, is heavily, heavily bruised, and her arm is way, way skinnier than you think it would be in proportion to not just her body, but also her upper shoulder and directly in comparison to her left arm. It is a heavy bruise, and I'm hesitant to think she is 100% injured at this time, but, I say that because she still throws a lot of lariats, and she still relies on a lot of power. But with a bruising like that and the size of her arm and being a powerhouse wrestler, there is a thought in the back of my mind that this woman has torn a bicep, maybe torn a muscle of some kind recently to cause such damage. And because of the scene and how much money is to be made at the time, that she is just wrestling through it and powering through it despite all that. Do you think this is a fair assessment?
See, I'm a bit hesitant to go on that because, if that were the case, Splash Mountain, you would see her struggle to do it, and she didn't seem to struggle to do it, really. I'm of the thought process that she might be a diabetic.
Ah,
so that was a discussion we had.
Yes.
I wouldn't say I'm an expert on diabetes. I do have family members that have it. But I feel like, given her arm shrinkage, and it's not just the one arm, it's actually both arms that are not bruised but shrunk. I feel like that's a case of having diabetes, bruising and stuff like that. I think is also easy with certain kinds of diabetes. It would make sense because she didn't wrestle like she was hurt.
And that's why I'm hesitant to be 100% in on this theory. But it is something that you notice, and this isn't the first time we've seen the bruising. She's had it for a while.
Right, that's also why I sort of think that she might just be a diabetic. And there's no way of us to know that, because in Japan, that's not publicly said by most people.
Yeah, nor should it. It's just something I've noticed throughout the matches, and she hasn't slowed down at all. Well, I mean, the power-wise, she hasn't slowed down.
In-ring wise, she's not the same. She's not going to the top rope for top rope headbutts, that's for sure.
She is doing double stomps that look like they cave in your chest, and I'm very, very worried every time that happens.
I mean, she beat the crap out of Akino, that's for fucking sure.
Akino had no shot. She did. Akino's still moving very well. I mentioned this in the last episode that we covered Oz Academy, where at 37 years old, Akino still has a lot of movement. And she really has held up a lot better than a lot of her peers, especially on the Oz Academy roster. The one that moves as fast as her, Carlos Amano and Chikayo Nagashima, they still have a lot to offer. Obviously, Yumi Oka and Kaoru have a lot to offer as well. Yumi Oka just isn't as Lucha Libre-esque as the other ones that I mentioned. And the same kind of goes with Kaoru. They're kind of in their own category. But Akino, she still moves and sells like she's in her 20s and really comes across as the young one of the roster. And they're really missing the next dynamic star to build at the top of the card, which kind of makes sense in hindsight why they decided to push Kaoru as their next champion to go up against Ozaki.
It makes sense in that regard, like you said. The funny thing with Akino is, even though she's old guard, she doesn't have like the pull, right? She doesn't have her own promotion. She's not really, she rarely goes outside of Oz Academy. Like if she does, it's usually just for another old person show, so she's not really doing anything there. But we see her in Actress Girls Modern Day under a mask, and she's not doing the job, but she's helping getting rookies tag wins. She's doing stuff in her own regard, and she's not going under Akino. You know, everyone knows it's Akino.
Right.
So it's interesting to see how she's same, but very kind of different in the same time. It's almost like she's kind of the weird in-between.
Yes.
In a way.
Yes,
so
it's
really interesting. She's not like your Yoneyamas or your Emi Sakuras, but she's also not like your Nanais or your Ozakis. So it's very interesting. I've learned to have a bit of a respect for Akino, even though she got her ass kicked in this match. It was very much looked like a rookie by how much Dynamite Kansai was just not selling and beating her up.
Yeah, I mean, the rule with Kansai is, I am beating your ass, you're taking Splash Mountain, and I'm taking a paycheck.
Yeah, at this point, Kansai is where Aja Kong is now. I'm hitting my big moves, you gotta pay me more to sell, and I'm taking my paycheck and going home.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, exactly. All right, main event time. Aja Kong, Kaoru. I can't get over the Tony Schiavone pronunciation of it. I love it so much. And Mayumi Ozaki taking on and defeating the team of Hiren. What is your nickname for her, Kay?
My tramp stamp queen.
Yeah, she's very attractive. With Takako Inoue, with Taser-chan.
Taser-chan fully on her ready at her side. No.
And our poor wave main eventer that never wins, Yumi Oka. 15 minutes, 38 seconds. We've gone through this 2010 journey. The entire year of 2010 is basically passed us by. Yumi Oka has zero main event wins. This is incredible.
I just find it funny you saying our poor Yumi Oka, because my brain flashes to modern day Yumi Oka, which is, I would be saying poor Yumi Oka now, would I?
I mean, you might.
No, I mean, she's in Wave, so I guess maybe.
Yeah,
maybe even more.
Yeah, poor Yumi Oka.
Has to manage that shit show.
Yeah, so this trios match is really built around the story of irritating the piss out of Ozaki. Kaoru and Aja Kong have a lot of fun with her. They're beating up Sekigun. Sekigun's fucking up. You know, they're Ozaki's hanging out in the apron. She wants nothing to do with what's going on. Eventually, she tags in. She has her fun, but then the imbeciles of Sekigun, namely Oka and Hiren, accidentally hit Ozaki. Ozaki's fed up. She like throws a chair. She hits them. She wants out. And then Kaoru cuts a promo on her. Aja Kong references, hey, if you leave, you signed this contract, you can't. Ozaki's mad. She gets back in the match. There's more shenanigans here. It's very entertaining stuff. It's a good in-ring story. While highlighting the kind of ineptitude of Sekigun. So it's definitely good face heel dynamics here going on. It's good storytelling. You absolutely understand what's going in there cold, as long as you kind of know the setup to it all. And then as the match goes on through the in-ring, slowly Sekigun, of course, takes over. They do the beatdowns over Kong and Kaoru, mostly Kaoru, because Kaoru's the champion. She's not Aja Kong. She's not. She doesn't have the clout of one Aja Kong. And as we get through the match, the babyfaces slowly start to take over. Sekigun loses control, and as expected, Taser Chan fucks up. Takes out our own teammates. And it ends kind of in a more controversial fashion, because Aja Kong and Yumioka and Kong are kind of left in the ring alone. Inoue has been taken out by Taser Chan. Kaoru's got her under control. Ozaki and Hiren are kind of whooping up on each other. They're pissed, but they've also been taken out by Kong simultaneously as well. So it's Kong and Oka. And Oka tries a couple moves, sorta gets the best of Kong, and then Kong gets up. She's had enough of this Sekigun shit. She whoops some Oka's face. She backfists the chick. She doesn't pin her, picks her up off the elbow, the Kaoru moonsault and elbow drop, picks her up again, backfists her down, and just like knee on the throat pins her. Bell rings, they win. Babyfaces defeat the evilness that is the home army. And Kong, all pissed off at this match with how it went down, picks up Oka, not completely off the mat, it's like picks her shoulders up, she's holding her by the hair, and starts whooping that ass. She's beating her like an MMA boxing champion, has got one down, and the ref and all of Sekigun, and including Kaoru, pull Kong off, and Oka is a bloody mess. Her nose is bloody, her face is busted open, her hair's a mess, and Sekigun gives Kong the 1,000-yard, you went too far, brah. Look, and even Kaoru's just like, dude, come on, we're the good guys. We aren't supposed to whoop so much shit out of our opponents, and Kong's had enough. She's like, bitch, I was killing somebody. How dare you? These guys are assholes. All right, well, I guess I'm going to come for you now if we're going to go down this way. If you're going to support, even if you're going to show Sekigun any mercy. After I've broken all this down, Kay, what are your feelings on the match and the story that unfolded?
I thought like everything you had said, it was very, very well done. I feel like you didn't accurately describe two things.
Okay.
Go for Ozaki took the chair and she didn't throw it. She was in the ring. She was already halfway down the aisle, and she just fucking chucks the chair, and it goes halfway into the ring. It almost hits somebody. So I thought that was I think she was trying to kill somebody. Just a heads up there. I think she almost hit Kaoru with the chair. If memory serves, and Kong didn't do a back fist. She did a backhand, and then the back fist. She didn't backfist her, she backhanded her. And she backhanded her hard, too.
Yeah, she completely busted Oka open. Poor Oka. That is the podcast
Oka
now.
Oka was busted hard way. There's no way she wasn't busted hard way with that backhand. I don't think Ozaki, like, fake hit, or Aja fake hit her. I think she legit smacked the shit out of her with it. Because it was a brutal backhand, and she backfists her for good measure. I like this. It sort of sets up a reason why Kong would sort of be the way she is, right? I believe she's the next challenger, if memory serves.
Sorta. We'll definitely. Great. Yeah, yeah. I have the. She does get a title match coming up. When that happens, I will not spoil that. But things ensue with Kaoru and Aja Kong. So this was a good main event. There was a lot of good wrestling here. It had a good story that sets up the eventual next title match. This is what that Amano Kato match was missing. This is what that Ran Yuyu Tomoko Nakagawa tag match was also missing. Was something setting up a program down the line. This was very well done. I very much enjoyed this.
Yeah, I second that. I enjoyed this a lot. I think this is the best match and best segment of period on the entire card.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much more of these type of Oz Academy shows we're going to do. But this was a good representation of kind of their typical card and their typical storytelling of the time and how they would go throughout the years. Now that we know just how these stories unfold and what they set up, I think we're kind of set with how Oz Academy approaches their main events.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think at least in 2010, we have a general idea of what their sort of deal is and how they build things.
Yeah, when other promotions go through some changes or there's a lot of turnover in the main event or mid-card, then obviously, you know, you kind of want to refamiliarize yourself with what's happening.
Yeah, no, I think we're going to see a lot of the fact that Oz Academy, even with these other promotions, change things up. Oz Academy remains the same. The one constant. Same with Sendai. Sendai is very much the same way. While everything around them is changing, they're still the same Sendai.
There you go. So, our next episode is the final episode of 2010 on this journey. It is Neo Stage Door, episode 13. That is the final show of Neo, our final episode of 2010. And we're also going, as we go through that show and kind of what we've learned in setting up 2011, some people go over. And we're going to go over our top five matches of 2010 and our top five kind of, I mentioned this before, it feels like not quite kayfabe because kayfabe will just like pick five old guard people, obviously. So maybe kind of an in-between setting there.
Okay, top five wrestlers, yeah, right.
Top five wrestlers with some sort of kayfabe-ness to it all.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably the best way to approach it, especially given the 2010s. When we get to the Neo episode, next episode, I have some very interesting facts that I would like to share with everybody next episode.
But don't have to wait till then. Very exciting. So yeah, if you want to get that episode 2 weeks early, again, sign up for the Red Leaf Retrocast Patreon. It's only $1.50 to support these particular episodes, and if you want more content, you got K's JD Star episodes. You got
awesome JD Star episodes.
Yeah, you got my LLPW shows coming out now, and my Starcade shows. So I'm putting out two big episodes on that $5 tier every month. So I feel like you get your money's worth.
Definitely, all those shows. Yeah, go check it out, man.
All right, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.